Billy and Clinton just stood there, for what seemed like eternity, in complete silence, studying the scene that confronted them and trying to comprehend the impossible. Clinton eventually spoke, slowly and in a half whisper. "But why, Dad? Why is this happening? What does it mean?" Billy shook his head. "Don't ask me, Clint. I'm as baffled as you are," he told him. "It doesn't make any sense to me, either. How could it? And don't ask me what I'm going to do about it, because I don't know. What can any of us do? We're obviously at the mercy of whoever, or whatever is doing to us." Clinton looked at his father and then shuddered. He knew he was right. Not from book/row comment, the circular marking here of the area this unbelievable happenings came to pass, and remark this happened in a time frame where many such contacts to human-like, so-called Pleiadian family planets happened. We know these contacts to the era Pleiadians which Edward Meyer had in this time period, and before that, those of the Amor contacts in Spain, France. Info from the spiritual science of the Danish wise man Martinus, there came very strong spiritual impulses to our Earth in the beginning of this century, and again in the beginning of the 70s. Those last opened more directly to contacts/information to other civilizations that guide our development. And some Fa'ana contacts happened from 1952 greater than X. Those of Albert Coe, Orfeo Angelucci and Robert P. Renaud plus 9, November 12, 1977, Pauline turned the old car slowly off the minor road and onto the dusty track that led up to the farm, and sighed to herself. It had already been a busy morning, but she had an even busier day ahead. Earlier that morning she'd had to drive the 8 miles into Milford Haven to collect Tina and her parents. After that there had been a mammoth load of shopping to do, and now there was lunch for 9 people to be cooked. She always looked forward to having the whole family over for the day, but cooking for them all at one sitting was a bit of an ordeal. "What's for lunch, Mum?" Tina, sitting next to her in the passenger seat, must have been reading her thoughts and was grinning, ear to ear. Trust her to be thinking of her stomach again. She reached over and gave her eldest daughter a playful poke in the ribs. "Whatever you get, my girl, whatever you get." She could hear her parents chuckling in the back of the car. They knew, all too well, about Tina's appetite, having had to cater to it for the 3 years that Tina had lived with them. Still, she thought, it was nice to have them all together again as a family. It seemed to happen all too rarely these days, particularly since all the strange things had been happening at the farm. It was only now, after a few weeks of comparative calm both at the farm and in the whole area, that Tina, and her parents, had felt relaxed enough to come visiting again. The atmosphere around the farm had, in fact, lost much of its tenseness recently, thank God, due mainly to the fact that nobody had been much to what had gone before. Even Billy was noticeably less moody than he had been, though she could tell he was still deeply disturbed over the inexplicable disappearances of the herd and their strange behavior. She glanced at her mum in the rearview mirror and studied her nervous expression for a moment. Poor mum. She was normally such an extrovert, bumptious character, who always got the upper hand, until now. It had taken further all his powers of persuasion to get her to venture to the farm again, and he must have found it difficult, particularly as he was a far more nervous, introverted character than she, and wasn't even sure he wanted to come in the first place. "All right, Mum?" she asked. No answer. Pauline glanced at the rearview mirror for a second time, but her mother wasn't in view. "Mum?" she glanced over her shoulder. Her mum, sitting in the back of the car on the passenger side to her left, clearly hadn't heard her. Her face pressed up close against the window, she was straining her neck to look something. "Mum, you all right?"
"Yes, love, I'm fine," she eventually heard her mother reply, her voice soft, hesitant and lacking in conviction. "Just that, well, I'm looking at that, up there. I can't make out what it is." Look, Pauline felt herself clench the steering wheel tighter, thoughts racing. She had purposely taken this back route to avoid using the main road along which that globe light had chased her that night, in order not to unnerve her parents before they even got to the farm, and now this. Surely nothing strange was happening again. please not. But wait. How could she have been so stupid? Wasn't it in the sky above these very fields, on either side of them, that she had seen the light that first night? She braked fiercely, the car sliding dustily to an erratic stop. From where she was sitting, she'd seen nothing out of ordinary as they had rumbled along the track towards the farm, only the straight route home, with the flat green fields that rolled away on either side, to her left away to the horizon and to the right, down to the cliff edge and the sea beyond. A perfect, still, sun-drenched country scene. Yet now Tina was leaning out of the window opposite, head tilted up, eyes squinting into the sun, tugging excitedly at her arm and squealing, "Mum, Mum, look at. It's fantastic. Mum, let's get out and look." She turned quickly and looked at her parents, now huddled together at the back window, her father straining to see what it was that was so frightening her mother with her head buried in his shoulder, apparently too shaken to move. The moment the car had slid to a halt, Tina had flung open her door and scrambled out of the car and was now struggling to open the door on the driver's side. "Mum, Mum, get out, quick!" she was screaming as she struggled with the handle of the door and then stumbled backwards as Pauline pushed it open. Once outside, Pauline squinted up into the sun herself, her eyes fighting to focus into the clear blue sky and following the direction Tina was pointing in, over the roof of the car and into the sky above the field opposite. And then, quite suddenly, she saw it. There, to the right of the sun, becoming clearer as her eyes adjusted to the glare, an enormous silver disc, just hanging in the sky, quite motionless, the sun reflecting slightly from its burnished surface, making it shine. She cupped a hand over her eyes against the glare and edged slowly forward around the back of the car and across the track to the edge of the hedgerow opposite. It was fantastic, a quite perfect, slightly domed disc, suspended there above her, magnificent, almost majestic. She moved a little further forward, daunted and awestruck by what she was seeing, but feeling compelled to move closer. She felt mesmerized by the sight of it. Dear God, it was like before. That first night, that first sighting, that first feeling? And now, it was moving, swaying slowly, first to one side, then to the other, in a slow and gentle arc, like a coin drifting down in water, or a leaf falling in a breeze. And the sensation was the same, as if its movement was a response, an act of recognition, a gesture. She inched forward a little further. "Mum." Tina's voice shook her back to reality. She spun around. "Grandmum and Grandad." Tina's words trailed away, but her frantic gestures indicated the importance of what she was trying to say, as she pointed anxiously in the direction of the car. With a final sideways glance at the disc, still hovering in the sky above her, Pauline hurried back to the car. "We'd better go now, Mum, hadn't we?" Tina was whispering urgently. "Grandmum and Grandad are really frightened, and, so ML." Pauline put an arm around her and squeezed her, her gaze simultaneously drawn back again to the giant silver craft. "You're right, love, we'll get straight home." Tina, trembling now, was holding tightly onto her arm. She gently released her grip and bustled her around to the passenger door. "Do your best to calm your grandparents," she told her, trying to keep a note of calm in her voice. "We'll be home in just a minute." She felt her eyes drawn back into the sky again and was aware of feeling frightened for the first time since she had seen the object. Remember what had happened to all the other cars whenever one of these things had been around? Remember how they had always broken down, their wiring somehow burned to a cinder? The sense of panic that she suddenly felt at the thought of being stranded in such an open space with that craft hanging over them, made her tighten up. The sense of wonderment that had so captivated her before, was now replaced by a sense of vulnerability and isolation. Home, though so close, felt too far away for comfort. She tried to push such thoughts to back of her mind as she bundled Tina into the car. Then it happened. Tina saw it move first, pointing frantically upwards in the direction of the object and screaming at everyone to look at what was happening. Pauline looked quickly over her shoulder, a sense of panic seizing her again. The object had started to move, climbing slowly now, drifting higher in the sky as they watched. not revolving as its shape seemed to require it to, but holding its position and just rising gently, in a perfectly vertical ascent. Tina was motionless, seemingly struck dumb by the sight of it, her head back and her mouth gaping in amazement. And still the object rose higher in the sky above them. It rose maybe another 50 feet, until it was about 200 feet up, stopped momentarily and then, with frightening suddenness, shot off across the sky, slicing its way with unswerving directness across the field behind them, off towards the cliff edge. Then it plunged down towards the outcrop of rocks just beyond the cliffs, and was gone. Pauline felt herself wince. Tina turned her head away and buried it in her shoulder, and she could see her parents duck down in the rear seat of the car in anticipation of the explosion they all felt would surely follow. But there was nothing. Everything was still. Somewhere nearby a bird trilled in the hedgerow. It was as though nothing had happened. For what seemed like an eternity, they all just stared blankly in the direction of the cliff edge, towards stack rocks and the horizon of sea beyond, neither speaking nor registering any emotion. Tina was first to break the silence. "What happened? Where did it go?" she whispered. Pauline looked at the bewildered, upturned face and sighed. "I don't know, love," she shrugged helplessly. "It's like we've all been telling you during these past months. We've all seen things like this. But it doesn't help us understand what's happening." She gave her a squeeze. "You're trembling, love, are you okay?" Tina snuggled closer beneath her mother's arm, nodded and smiled half-heartedly. Pauline surveyed the scene again. Nothing. Everything just as before. Just the dusty track dividing the expanse of daisy-spotted fields around and an everlasting ceiling of cloudless blue sky overhead. Perfect tranquility. "Pauline. Please, love." Her mother's voice shook her back to reality. "Sorry, Mum," she sighed, reaching past Tina and squeezing her mother's arm through the open window of car. "We'll get straight home now. Tina, get in as quick you can. Please God, let it start," she thought to herself as she settled into the driver's seat. By the look of her parents, any further strain would be the breaking of them. Nervously, she turned the ignition and then gave a little silent prayer of thanks when the car stirred immediately into life. It was only a matter of minutes before the car rumbled the gravel drive in front of the farmhouse, and the rest of the family, with the exception of Billy, who was not back from a business trip to the next farm, were for them at the front door. To judge from their one or all of them had already seen what had been happening over the field behind the farm. "We saw it, too, Mum. Why the hell did you stop out there?" Clinton was demanding. The moment Pauline emerged from the car, "You could have been in danger, with that thing so close to you." Pauline gestured to Clinton to hold his tongue and ushered him to one side, indicating to Tina to take her grandparents into the house. "Clinton, don't be so bloody stupid, talking like that in front of Grandmum and Grandad," she scolded him. "They're frightened enough as it is, without you saying things like that." Clinton looked sheepish for a moment, then worried. "Okay, Mum, I'm sorry, but... well, did you see it properly? What was it like?" "It looked incredible from where we first saw it, from the kitchen window." "Did it make any noise? Why did you stop the car? Did it break down on you?" Pauline raised a finger to her lips. "Clinton, enough. Look, we'll go and see if your grandparents are all right. Then you can come down the coast path with me and we'll have a look and see what happened to it. I'll tell you everything then." She prodded him in the direction of the house. The moment they got inside, her worst fears were realized. Tina, with Kieran, Lan and Joanne huddled around her, was now busy reliving every minute of what had just happened to them, while her parents sat silently at the kitchen table. Her mother still obviously badly shaken, her father doing his best to console her and make tea at the same time. "Clinton, get the kids out of here," she instructed irritably, her nerves now getting the better of her. "Take them into the front room and I'll be in to talk to you all in a minute." She watched him lead the children out of the room and then went and sat with her mother. "Okay, Mum?" Her mother managed a weak smile. "She'll be all right in a bit," her father assured her, "but what are you going to do now? Going to see what happened to that disc thing, are you?" "I should really, Dad," she told him, It did come down on our land, after all. It's our responsibility. She bit her tongue as soon as she had spoken and, as her mother grabbed her arm, immediately regretted having opened her mouth.
Pauline, love, you can't go down there, you just can't, she was urging. You never know what you might find down there, it could be dangerous.
Please, Pauline, no.
Mum, Mum, it's all right, honestly, I'll take Clinton with me and we'll be very careful, she told her, trying to sound as comforting as possible.
She was sure her mother was far from reassured, but was equally sure that she had to go and see for herself what had happened down by the cliffs.
You go on, Pauline, we'll be fine, her father interceded. Take care, won't you?
Pauline nodded confidently, blew her parents a kiss and their room to fetch Clinton. Clinton already had his coat when she got back into the hall, as had Kieran, Tina, Joanne and Lan. Clinton came over to her, shaking his head.
It's no use, he sighed. They're all frightened out of their wits, too excited to stay behind.
Pauline looked over his shoulder to the silent group assembled behind him near the front door. She could see what he meant. None of them were saying a word and they looked anxious, but it was clear they weren't going to be left out of anything. There was no alternative, she'd have to take them all. To tell them to stay behind would be certain to cause a fuss, and her parents' nerves were in bad enough state already. She told them all to wait where they were, and went into the kitchen.
Mum, Dad, we're off now, just going down the coast a little way to see if we can see anything.
Won't be long.
You and Kieran? And the rest of the kids?
All of you?
Pauline, no, you can't.
Mum, I'm not arguing with you.
Look, we'll be fine, honestly. We're not going all the way along the coast path, just a little way. We won't be more than a minute or two.
She left the room immediately, closing the door behind quickly. She stopped momentarily, falling back against it and taking a deep breath. How she wished Billy were home. This was all too much for her to cope with on her own.
Ready, Mum?
Clinton already had the front door in and the rest of the kids were milling around in the porch. She nodded wearily and followed them outside. Kieran and the twins were noticeably subdued as they set off down the drive towards the cowsheds. In the normal way they would have been off and running by this time, she thought to herself, but not today. For once they walked behind her, staying close, as did Dina. Only Clinton walked ahead of her, doubtless because he felt that as the only man amongst them it was his duty. He didn't look particularly happy with his chosen role, though. He kept looking nervously over his shoulder at her, as the group made their way around the corner, past the cowsheds, and into the first of the two fields that separated the farm from the cliff edge. They would walk down the edge of the first field, cross the second and then join up with the coastal path that ran the full length of the cliffs along the coast to the resort town of Broadhaven, 2 miles away. It was only about a mile or so along the path to the spot where they had seen the object come down, somewhere near the outcrop called Stack Rocks that lay about a quarter of a mile or so offshore. It wouldn't take them long to get there. They walked quickly and quietly all the way. Pauline had seldom seen the children so quiet or pensive. She knew how they felt. Suddenly the familiar countryside around them felt alien, almost hostile. The surrounding expanses of open pasture made her feel terribly exposed and vulnerable, and the urge to keep looking nervously up in the sky and over her shoulder never left her. The others seemed to feel the same. As they left the rough track at the perimeter of the first field and began threading their way through the grass of the second, she wondered if the children shared her increasing reservations about going on. The further they got away from the farm and into the deserted countryside, the more uneasy she felt. And wasn't this the same field where the twins had first seen that disc, that had then taken off at such speed and vanished over the cliff edge? She glanced over her shoulder at them. Their expressions confirmed the fact. If the idea of walking back to the farm by themselves wasn't so frightening, they would surely have preferred to turn back. She slowed her pace to let them catch up, stepped between them and put her arms around their shoulders.
All right, twins? She asked them, squeezing their shoulders, trying to sound as matter-of-fact as possible.
Well, wanted to come, didn't you? Exciting, isn't it? It was too late to turn back now. In any case, They were already at the coast path. So far, so good, she thought to herself. They'd head straight back home as soon as Takrox came into view. She must be mad to have come down here, particularly with the children. Her mother was right. She prodded the twins ahead of her, telling them to walk in single file, behind Tina, Gian, and Clinton, who was leading the way. The coastal path was only a couple of feet wide, and the cliff edge was perilously close to it. Take it slowly, Clint, she called, and stop when you get around the next bend and can see the rocks. Clinton waved acknowledgement and duly stopped at the corner, where the path was wide enough for a small group of people to gather in safety. There they are, Mum, Stackrox, he announced, pointing out to sea. Greater than, the little group turned, as one, and looked out from the cliff top to the outcrop of rocks, clearly visible in the bright mid-afternoon sun, the surf gently breaking around its perimeter. On such days, thought Pauline to herself, it looked particularly barren and beautiful, a great, undulating island of grey rock jutting defiantly out the ocean like a mighty twin-humped sea monster. No wonder everyone who saw it was captivated by its mystery. There was something strange about it, an aura of nobody, not even local Pembrokeshire folk who were normally so steeped in myth and legend, knew the history of the rock or whether it was of any significance. Yet it seemed special, at least to those who knew it well. Plant life could proliferate on it, yet there was none. Birds could have populated it, yet there were few. In stormy weather, the sea surrounding it would sometimes as inexplicably calm as a millpond. Snow would settle on other coastal outcrops of rocks, but never on Stackrox, not even on its highest peak. Pauline stared long and hard at it, scanning her eyes along the length and breadth of it. She had already noticed the rest of them studying the cliff face below and the bays and grottos that lay along its base, but she somehow knew where her attention belonged. How could it have been a coincidence that when any of them had seen a strange object either in the sky or on the ground, by day or by night, it had always ended up heading for this particular spot, then vanishing over the cliff edge? There must have been a reason, and the only significant difference about this part of coastline was Stackrox. But in what way was it significant? She concentrated her gaze harder on the rocks. But there seemed to be nothing, no clue as to what had happened to the disk that had seemed, so clearly, to plummet straight into them only half an hour earlier. All that moved on them was the occasional gull. In fact, as she watched, she could only see one solitary white bird, midway up the highest protrusion of rock. There, she could just see it again. First it was moving into view, then it was gone. And now back again. But wait. Dear God, what was that? A white shape, moving about on the rocks, but that was no gull, it was a figure. A man? No, wait. She could see it clearly now. What she'd seen before was only a fleeting glimpse of a limb, an arm or a leg. Now she could make out the whole figure as it came into view, descending from a higher level on the rock and down to a flatter area at the water's edge. And it wasn't white, it was silver. A tall, silver-salted figure. Mum, look, look at the rocks. Clinton had now seen it, too, and was shouting to her from a few yards further down the coastal path. Can you see it? See the man? He was shouting. I see it, she called, looking quickly back to the rock as Tina, Gian and the twins gathered around her. Who is it? What do you think it's doing? Gian was gabbling next to her, pushing his way past the twins to get a better view. Okay, be still, just keep quiet and look, Pauline instructed him, as she tried to concentrate on what she was seeing. The figure was now quite clearly in view, even at that distance. It must, she reasoned, be enormous. Visions of the figure at the window flooded back. Yes, he must be same size, something like 10, maybe 12 feet tall. And that silver clothing, the same. But what was he, it, doing? She couldn't make it out. Crouching, it was crouching, as if looking at something, or for something. She turned to Clinton, who was now standing next to them, gaping at the sight in front of him, as they all were. Clint, what's he doing? She asked him. Can you make it out? Clinton shook his head, then suddenly grabbed her arm excitedly. Mum, look, up higher, higher up the rock above him. I don't believe it, it's a... No, wait, it can't be. Pauline lifted her gaze upwards over the figure, up the slight incline of rock behind it, to a ledge a little higher up. And then she saw what had caught Clinton's attention. There, standing half shrouded in shadow, was another figure, the same as the first one. Yes, love, I see it, another figure, she acknowledged. No, not that, not just the figure, he was insisting. But behind the figure. That's not a shadow he's standing in, a doorway honestly, look. Apostrophe a what? She gave him a quizzical, sideways look, then returned gaze to the rock. As she did so, the second figure moved forwards, out of the shadow. But wait. My God, Clint was right. Now the shadow was somehow moving, thinning out, gone. And in its place, a perfectly flat, metal-looking surface, glinting slightly in the sun. The figure was moving back again, and what had looked to her to be a shadow, was now spreading out behind him. It was a door. It had to be. A sliding door, first open, then closed. Now open again to reveal the blackness within. But how could this be? She looked around her at the children. Did you all see that? She found herself asking, helplessly. Did you see it? Did you see what just happened? They didn't seem to hear her, talking amongst themselves as they now were. The distance that separated them from the extraordinary scenario that was unfolding before them, seemed to have given them courage. She looked back to the rock. The second figure had now emerged again from the door for a second time and was making his way down to his companion at the water's edge. Once there, he stood motionless, apparently looking on. The first figure then moved along the water's edge. When he reached an inlet which blocked his path, he paused momentarily and, to her amazement, seemed to walk across the water for a few paces to the opposite side. Again she turned to Clinton to solicit confirmation of what she'd seen. She didn't have to ask. Incredible. Clinton was muttering to himself, this is bloody incredible. She looked down at the twins, still one under each arm, and then behind her to where Kia and Antina were standing. All were silent now, struck dumb again by what they'd seen. Thank God they had seen it, though. To have witnessed this on her own, and then had to live with it for the rest of her life with nobody else believing her, would have been too much to bear. Now, at least, there would always be five other people who could swear to have seen the same thing. The two figures were now making their way up the lower face of the rock towards the ledge and the door above. Strange, she thought, how effortless their ascent was, like they were almost floating over the surface of the rock face. And now they were by the door again, just standing there, so tall, so motionless, just looking out to sea, across to the cliffs. Across to them? Panic suddenly took hold of her. Come on, kids, right now let's go, quickly, as fast as you can, she found herself shouting at them, bundling the twins off down the coastal path and waving to Clinton, Kia and Antina to follow her. Clinton ran up next to her, what's the matter, Mum? Why the panic? He was asking her, breathlessly. Don't be so bloody stupid, Clint, she snapped at him, we could see those. Whatever they were clearly, they must have been able to see us, right? We don't know who they are, what they are, where they come from, or what they want. If they're not friendly, what then, and us stuck out here on our own? Clinton nodded. Just make sure Kia and Antina stay with you and don't about, she urged him, we've got to get home as quick as possible. She patted him on the back and smiled encouragingly not convincingly. If she had originally felt vulnerable in these wide open spaces on the cliffs, she now felt even more unsafe, the expanse of pasture ahead of them seeming to stretch away into infinity, and home never having so far away. On, across the field they stumbled, up the perimeter path of the next field, into the farmyard, up the drive and, finally, into the security of the farmhouse. Pauline? Is that you? Thank God you're all right. We worried sick, you were so long. Her mother had come hurrying out of the kitchen when she heard the front door open. It's all right, Mum, we're all fine, Pauline assured her, her a quick peck on the cheek. Help me get some tea for us all, will you? She caught sight of her father, Dad, I'll be right in to give you both a hand in just a minute, okay? Seeing H41 is daughter's knowing wink, her father dutifully read her mother back into the kitchen and shut the door.